ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mania Mania! Welcome to Mania Mania 24. I'm your host, Terry Lumberjill Catlett, and this, as always, is my perfect tag team partner, Jway, the Samoan Bulldozer Holt.
Yeah.
And today we review for you WrestleMania 24. Jway, what has happened to build up to WrestleMania 24?
Okay, so in between 23 and 24, Chris Benoit no longer exists.
Wow.
He has been wiped off the existence of pro wrestling.
Why? And why is that?
Because
we all know why. I'm being a little facetious about that, but did you agree with the way they kind of treat it? I mean, there's probably no right answer here as far as what to do as a business.
Yeah.
But yeah, like what you're saying is they kind of wiped him from the books.
Yeah. There's like talks of WrestleMania 20 where he went over Shawn Michaels and Triple H.
Mm-hmm.
It says Triple H and Shawn Michaels were so evenly matched that they both they canceled each other out and lost to a third man.
Wow.
That's like how they just say a third man.
Yeah, this is a point that could be debated. I just it's a bad situation.
Yeah, from a PR standpoint, I'm sure it would have been like if they didn't do that and they're like, "Oh, you're supporting a murderer."
Yeah.
I'm like, "Well, I'm not supporting a murderer."
No, we had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, this stuff happened. We're actively not.
Well, so those events have a kind of a little black cloud over this thing.
So, back to wrestling.
Yeah.
In January of 2008 or in a late 2007, John Cena injured his shoulder, and he was supposed to be out 6 months.
Okay.
And so he was supposed to miss Mania. He was supposed to miss the Royal Rumble. January of 2008, he appears at the Royal Rumble at number 30. So he like healed super.
Goodness.
He healed super fast, and Triple H was in the ring. And he was
steroids,
like, and he was like yelling at Cena's like, "No, no, right. You shouldn't be here. You should still be hurt."
That's right.
John Cena ended up winning.
Of course, he
winning
did.
The Royal Rumble because he's Super Cena. He wins the Rumble. He gets a number. He gets a number one title, number one contender shot at WrestleMania.
Right.
At the Elimination Chamber in February, Triple H won, and he also got the number one contender. So it becomes a triple threat match.
All right.
It's Randy Orton.
My favorite.
Yeah. And then also Edge and Undertaker are going at it. Edge says he's going to beat the streak. Undertaker says, no, you're not. No, nuh-uh. And then he's like, I'm also going to get your championship belt because Edge was champion at this time as well.
One more thing I'd like you to set up. I don't know if you have this on your notes, but there was an interesting gimmick match in this one, kind of a cross-promotional thing and the reason I want you to bring up the boxing match was because the build-up was kind of unique in this one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was Big Show versus Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Right.
I believe it was Big Show was facing against Rey Mysterio, and Floyd Mayweather was in the crowd, and he jumped over the barricade to help out Rey Mysterio.
Of course.
And then on Raw, Big Show like taunted Floyd Mayweather, and then he got down on one knee, and Floyd Mayweather punched him four times in the face and broke his nose.
I don't know if you've seen the recent Stone Cold podcast with the Big Show, but he goes into talking about that, and I really thought it was cool. First of all, just the length he was willing to go to sell this match.
Yep.
He basically goes to Floyd and says, I want you to break my nose.
Yeah.
And then when you do, I want you to run.
Yeah.
Because I cannot control myself after that happens.
Yeah.
And so I specifically watched that spot.
Yeah.
And Floyd lays it in because he's a pro and he does it. And then him and his entire posse take off. Like, I mean, they
book it.
They go fast.
Big Show was even like, because Shane blocks his way. He's like, no, stop. He's like, if Shane wasn't there, I would have killed him.
I know.
And like, I think that's true.
So great. So big props to the Big Show for going and doing everything it takes to sell a match.
Yes.
Well, let me set the stage for WrestleMania 24. It is March 30th, 2008. We are in the Citrus Bowl in Orlando, Florida, and we are playing to 74,635 people. And we start this show with the plane flyby, which is pretty cool. And then we introduce John Legend singing America the Beautiful,
which
was just fine. He played wonderfully, sounded beautifully, and it was live, which I always like, as opposed to lip sync. We do a video promo for WrestleMania, and then JR welcomes us. The crowd is going wild, and we're ready for match number one, which is between
John Bradshaw Layfield versus Finley with Hornswoggle.
And this is a Belfast brawl, which, to the appearance, it just looked like hardcore rules. I didn't notice any special any special stipulation that made it a Belfast brawl, as opposed to, because it was no DQ, no countouts,
right?
A pin, you either had to be pinned or submit in the middle of the ring. I guess maybe that's the only thing. I guess the difference between the hardcore matches that you could be pinned anywhere. I guess, but I was thinking when I heard Belfast brawl, I was thinking of a bigger gimmicked match than that.
No, they do this a lot where they don't want to say like hardcore, or they don't want to say extreme, so they'll throw in a, like, Miz and Dolph Ziggler were having matches where like every, they would be like the Memphis Beale Street Brawl, and it was just a hardcore match, or like the Cleveland Tussle match.
There was a lot of angle built into this match, a lot of soap opera drama in the back on who was whose father, and they showed some in the video. I couldn't follow it all because apparently they'd done this for a long time, but there were personal stakes in this match as far as paternity and and other things. But anyway. JBL really kind of takes this match over early and is just beating Finley merciless. The thing I like about having the third man in the ring is that they do tend to distract, and it kind of ignites comebacks from certain wrestlers. You know, Finley was able to take over in this match. My favorite move of this match is Finley's kind of – JBL's on the outside, and, you know, Finley does the running leap through the ropes.
Yeah, the suicide dive,
And then JBL actually picks up a trash can lid, and just as he's about to hit JBL on the ground, he just baseball bats him with the trash can lid. It looked really cool.
Yeah, and then, oh, man, just the suicide dive, and then he doesn't have a base. Like, suicide dives, you need somebody to catch you.
Yeah.
He didn't get caught. Instead, he got hit in the face.
Big bump for sure on Finley. What did you take? Because this is the first match, and I'm really agreeing with your side on this now that I really like Money in the Bank first.
Yeah,
it's really exciting match. It's got good pace and a bunch of stuff. It's, you know, big bumps and, and all that. Instead of maybe this one.
Yeah, I thought this one they did well, but you need to have Money in the Bank first. In my opinion, you need to have Money in the Bank first. I know it's a big gimmick match, but you need like. And people look forward to it, but they look forward to WrestleMania as well. Like, you start it off, get the crowd hyped really fast, really quick.
This one of my pet peeves is when you've got outside help and it doesn't interfere in the finish.
Yeah.
And Hornswoggle was on the outside and watched his I guess, dad get pinned. JBL gets the clothesline from hell and the win as Hornswoggle just stands there and does nothing, which... it makes no sense to me. But JBL ends up going over in the Belfast brawl, and JR put the stamp of it as a slobber knocker. So, you know, we just started and we've already had our slobber knocker.
That's pretty good.
That is.
I mean, when your quota is only.
I stand corrected.
If your quota is only two, then getting the first one out of the way.
First one out of the way. We're slobber knocker count at one. We go right to the back, and Kim Kardashian is with us tonight.
Yep, she's a guest host.
So she'll be talking often.
Thank goodness.
And it was really cute that she was trying to speak, and she seemed to be doing it well. And then she's interrupted by Mr. Kennedy.
Yep.
And I really enjoyed her breaking in this one. Like,
yeah, she could not.
She could not keep a straight face. Nor probably could I, as Mr. Kennedy was yelling at me. And she tries to keep it together, but doesn't, which was adorable.
Yeah.
And she just wins the hearts of America. And then we go right to match number two, which is between
John Morrison versus Carlito versus the gold standard Shelton Benjamin versus CM Punk versus Mr. Kennedy versus MVP versus Y2J Chris Jericho.
Boom. And this is the Money in the Bank ladder match that we were just talking about. And Shelton Benjamin got himself some blonde hair. He's going to make that gimmick stand out.
Yep.
I've really liked his work in the last few ladder matches that I've seen him in. Mm-hmm. He doesn't disappoint in this one either. One of the ones that I really liked a lot, John Morrison wasn't someone that I really remembered was familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of great moves in this
one. Yes.
I guess he's no longer with the company now.
And he's with, what is it, Lucha Underground.
I liked him
Johnny
a lot.
Mundo.
He's
great work.
He's got agility, and that moonsault he did with the ladder
mm-hmm.
was really great.
Yep.
He had a lot of good spots in this one. Y2J was super over. CM Punk was super over in mm-hmm. this match. I thought the unique start to this match was the bell rang, the opening bell rang,
mm-hmm.
everyone ran for a ladder.
Yep.
That was just really cool.
I like that. Except MVP who waited in the ring. I think it would have been better if all like eight of them or seven, however many people are out there, they mm-hmm. all go and get a ladder and then they're all just standing there with a ladder.
Right.
Like, wait, hang on.
Well, they kind of did. They MVP and Chris Jericho jousted with ladders.
Yep.
Jericho had the longer ladder, so he won that one.
Mm-hmm.
There was a really cool Sunset Flip powerbomb on Morrison and Kennedy.
Yeah, Sunset Flip superplex.
That was pretty awesome. What else did you like? Basically, it's just a spot fest.
Yeah.
There's so many great spots in this one.
Yeah, there's one. Shelton was on the ladder, and Carlito pushes it over.
Yeah.
And then Shelton, holding onto the ladder, stands on the top rope, and then he like pushes himself back up.
Right.
I'm like, oh, man. I think the ladder might have broken at that point, but it was like that was – just the trust that you have in yourself and your agility is that's...
And with an apparatus that may or may not be stable.
Yeah.
You know? Because there was at one point, like, I think he was trying to do something on a ladder and it just kind of broke and he kind of fell off of it.
Yeah.
The Carlito backbuster on Y2J off the ladder.
Oh, man.
Was really good. Got a huge pop.
Yes.
Matt Hardy made an appearance in this one.
Yes.
He came out from the back. Apparently there was some feud, some angle with
him and MVP.
But he actually ends up keeping MVP from winning because mm-hmm. he hits him with the Twist of Fate off the ladder and then he escapes into the crowd.
Yep.
Never to be seen again.
Nope. He's done.
He's done. That's it. He got his payday. I just come in, do one move, and go home.
Yeah.
This match starts to end, and we're going home with Punk and Y2J fighting on top of the ladder. They're kind of exchanging blows back and forth, mm-hmm. and then they do a thing where Jericho gets his leg caught in the ladder, so he's just kind of hanging.
Yeah.
From one side of the ladder, and then Punk climbs up and grabs the
money
in the
bank. I
kind of
like that. Oh, there's a couple. Jericho put the Walls of Jericho on John Morrison.
Did that
on the ladder?
Yeah, but that it didn't look right. It looked kind of weird.
Well, I mean, he's trying to.
But like, I couldn't decide who was the offense on that one.
Yeah, it was because John Morrison had to do so much to help.
Exactly.
That he couldn't really I'm in so much pain.
No, I.
It was a good idea.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Bad execution.
Yeah, so I just couldn't see who was getting the worst of that one.
Yeah.
It's like The Rock giving the...
giving the sharpshooter.
The sharpshooter.
Oh, we'll get to see that again in about three episodes.
Yay! So Punk ends up getting the money of the bank.
Yeah.
And the crowd is pretty happy about that.
Yeah.
CM Punk's really over right now.
Yeah, he is.
Anything else on this one, sir?
There was one more. Jericho went for a code breaker
uh-huh.
with the ladder on CM Punk. I think CM Punk was holding the ladder, and then Jericho did a code breaker on it, which is like the Carlito's backbreaker,
mm-hmm.
except to his front.
Okay.
So it was like two knees to the face.
That was pretty dead.
But Punk was ahead of the ladder. Like, that was a good spot.
A lot of big high spots in this match. Really
and now
match.
I am done with this match.
Yay! We go to the back, and they're showing the combatants in the triple threat. They're showing John Cena getting mentally prepared. They're showing Orton getting mentally prepared. They're showing Triple H getting mentally prepared. And
mm-hmm.
The crowd's getting mentally prepared.
Yeah, everybody's mentally prepared.
We then do a little video montage of the 2008 Hall of Fame ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really good class that is then introduced to the crowd. You got the Briscoes. You got Gordon Solie,
mm-hmm.
Rocky Johnson, Peter Maivia, Eddie Graham, Mae Young, and then the man, Ric Flair, was inducted into the Hall of Fame.
That was a great speech. Also, you have to watch back. It was long, but it was good.
I was about to say, go watch it and take about an hour to do it. But you know what? If anyone deserves to stay that long, it's that guy.
Yeah, right.
He's done some great stuff. And then they go to the back and interview Snoop Dogg.
Mm-hmm.
Santino interrupts and he wants no funny business, which I don't know what that means. But
no funny business.
I didn't see the build up to this, but I kind of know what's going to happen.
Yeah, funny business will be happening.
Mick Foley comes in, and he's really good friends with Snoop Dogg.
Who isn't?
And Mick tells us to have a nice dizzle. And then we go right to match number three, which is between
Batista versus the Samoan Bulldozer Umaga.
Boom. And this is a battle for brand supremacy. Mm-hmm. And I guess rather than any other type of title match, mm-hmm. we just do a battle for brand supremacy. So as I understand yep. it, the commissioners for each brand pick their head dog. Mm-hmm. There's no hair loss involved.
No,
in this
no
one.
Hair loss. No.
It's just two guys that are going at it. Batista, of course, gets a really great response. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if my feed skipped, but it seemed to go from light to dark really quickly.
Yeah, the sunset hard.
I mean, we just introduced the Hall of Fame where there was still light, daylight, yeah. and then boom, right for these entrances, it was completely dark. Yeah.
Well, it's cool. I did kind of like the Money in the Bank kind of still being a little bit of light.
Yeah.
But like Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels, when it gets there, it's pitch black. And I'm like,
yeah.
good. I wanted it that way. Yeah. But yeah, it was very...
I just noticed like it was drastic.
It was very sharp, like a sharp contrast.
This match didn't do a lot for me. Dave Bautista is not my favorite dude. Great look, but you know, I didn't really see any psychology in this match. And so, I don't know, it seemed like all the offensive spurts were kind of brief. And the comebacks were also kind of brief. So there was never really any kind of momentum generated in this match to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, a little bit, like, because this is only, like, a seven-minute match. Umaga then starts to dominate because he cuts off Batista's last comeback. And then Batista throws Umaga into the post, gets a spine buster, and then gets a Batista bomb for the win. Mm-hmm. But it was, as he got Umaga up, he started to, like, it seemed like Umaga got too much momentum.
Yes.
So he kind of stumbled.
Yep.
And Dave had to work super hard to get the powerbomb in. Like, he may have hurt his back trying to get in position to bomb him.
Yeah, there was he had, like, so much momentum when he picked him up that it was, like, it could have been real bad.
Yeah, but he gets the 1-2-3 for the win, and Batista goes over. I wasn't a super huge fan of this match. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. It was almost just like a palate cleanser. Like, all right,
I mean, everyone looked fine. It was okay, but nothing spectacular. We cut to JR and the King talking about the Floyd show matchup. And then we cut to Floyd in the back with his posse, as I'll mm-hmm. call them.
Mm-hmm.
Taz then recaps the Battle Royal to challenge Chavo for the ECW Championship.
Yep.
And then we cut to match number four, which is between
Chavo Guerrero versus Kane.
And this is for the ECW Championship. As I alluded to prior to the introduction of this match, apparently there was a big, long tournament. It was a dark match.
Oh, it was a Battle Royal.
Battle Royal?
Yeah, not a tournament. Battle Royal.
Battle Royal, it was a dark match, mm-hmm. So we didn't see that, but Kane ended up winning, and then they have a squash match.
Yeah.
It was 11 seconds.
Yes.
Kane didn't do his normal entrance. Chavo came in first, and then Kane just stuck up from behind him, choke slammed him, and pinned him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Why?
Okay.
No, I get
it. Yeah, that's...
No, I did... I didn't see the point of having a giant battle royal.
Right.
And then not really having a championship match.
Yeah.
And then taking the title off a dude. It makes sense to me, like, oh, guy just went through a whole battle royal. I'm going to pin him real fast because he's tired or mm-hmm. injured.
Yep.
But it was the challenger that came in and just squashed.
Yeah. It seemed a little, I was like, why would you just...
I was hoping you'd have an explanation for this one.
Well, it was 11 seconds.
You would be able to tell me and make my brain stop thinking about this. This makes no sense. You're supposed to explain things
okay,
to me.
Okay, well, here we go. Kane is a monster.
Yeah.
And if anybody even lasts... Chavo's lucky he lasted 11 seconds with Kane. Kane is the devil's favorite demon, okay? He's the Undertaker's brother. He lived through fire.
Okay. Now you're just patronizing. That's fine.
He had to face Great Khali a year ago.
I don't care anymore. Whatever.
Yes, you do.
No.
Whatever. I don't have an answer.
No.
I'm sorry,
Fuck
Terry.
Fuck you and the ECW
sorry.
Championship. I don't care. All this right. makes no sense to me. It's at WrestleMania. Yes, I know Kane's a monster, and I hope that he makes up with his brother because I just want him to live happy at Christmas. this match is over, thankfully. Well,
imagine them at Thanksgiving.
<I know. laughs> we go to a commercial for some reason. Carlito's attacked by a bird. I don't get it.
Commercials for the event that they're currently at.
Yeah. Well, I hope people watched it. We then go to Raven Simone being announced in the center of the ring.
Yeah.
Not super over with the WrestleMania crowd.
No.
But she's there for a great purpose, and she introduces the one thing that WWE does fantastically with their charities is the Make-A-Wish program, and they paid tribute to that, so that was fine. It's just Raven wasn't super over.
Correct.
They do a video promo for the next match, and then there is an interview with the immortal Ric Flair, and his game plan is to be the man. He's just awesome.
Yeah.
I love him so much. Ric Flair's great. We go right to match number 5, which is between
Shawn Michaels versus Ric Flair.
This is a career-threatening match. If Ric Flair loses this match, his career is over, and we don't mean that in the real sense. We mean that in the wrestling sense, meaning that he's going to lose this match, retire, and then wrestle next week.
Yes.
But this leads us right to our first email question, and it is from @Firo. It is, what is your favorite Ric Flair match?
I do not have a lot of history or knowledge of Ric Flair's history.
Okay.
So this one is...
This one would be it?
Yeah. I mean, I do. I have seen quite a few of his matches, but this one is my favorite.
Previous to this one, there was a match between him and Kerry Von Erich.
I knew it was this one.
No, the reason it's not my favorite match is because it was more based on building the Freebird feud.
Okay.
Because that's the one where Terry Gordy slammed the cage on Kerry Von Erich's head. Ric Flair just happened to be in that match.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
My favorite match was the Dave Von Erich Memorial. I was actually
in the
crowd.
That's the one I met.
And he takes the backslide and gives up the title. It probably wasn't a fantastic technical match, but just the build up and the way that crowd popped when he went over, that's my favorite Ric Flair match.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It just probably the best ones are with Ricky Steamboat and Sting.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, technically I'm sure they are. But I mean,
but the question was, what's my favorite?
Yeah. My favorite is this one because I haven't seen very many of them.
I watched this match live, and so it was really cool to revisit it again. This was a celebration to a man that kind of paved the way for everything that they're doing now. You know, you can count on maybe one hand the guys that really kind of launched this form of entertainment. Mm-hmm. Ric Flair being one of them, Hulk Hogan,
of course,
arguably the Jerry the King Lawler, like just the big territory guys that you know. Just made names for them in this business and got it to the level where Vince could capitalize. And so it was great that they were sending him off in this way.
Yeah.
Huge, huge production value, great entrance. And then I really like this match.
Yes.
There is something in the business known as the Ric Flair match. He gets knocked for having the same match on every time. And I thought what HBK came up for this match was really good in that they kind of turned that on his head.
Yes.
This was a match to me for smarks because, you know, Ric Flair has his set of moves. His only offense really is the chop. This was a chop fest.
Yep.
Which was great.
Of course.
But every move that Ric Flair usually does that makes him heelish or gets him, they reversed it. So like HBK went up to the top rope and then Ric Flair threw him off.
Yeah.
Ric Flair then goes to the top rope to do
the splash that he's never done.
He's never done it, and he actually got to do the splash.
Yeah.
And the King was great because he was selling it. He was like, no, don't. It's never worked. Yeah. And then he looked like a man who's never actually completed that move.
Yeah.
Because it was one of the worst splashes. It was mostly like he was just falling forward into Shawn Michaels' arms.
Yeah.
But it was... The pop that got from the King was that's my favorite part of this whole. He did it.
Yeah,
it was like watching Rocky win. It was so fantastic.
Yeah. There was some really really solid stuff in this. Shawn Michaels went for his moonsault.
Yeah,
the Asai moonsault from the second rope to the Ric Flair on the table.
Yeah,
Ric Flair moved.
Yes.
So he took the edge of the table right to the gut.
Yeah, that table didn't break.
Ugh. Oh, no.
It looked really painful. Yeah. I was wondering, he's such a good seller, it's hard to know when he's really hurt.
Yeah.
But watching how that move landed, you think, oh, broken ribs. He at least knocked the wind out of himself.
Yes.
You see that. But I was curious for the rest of the match just how hurt he was. He didn't perform like it, but when he hit the flying elbow, when, you know, some of the bigger moves that he took, he was always selling that midsection.
Yeah.
this match was really sculpted out really great. It was a like a 21-minute match, so they let him go for a long time. They really utilized the figure four.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of – so – you know, a lot of build up to that, and then the reversals of that.
Yeah.
You know, using the psychology of I'm gonna end your career with your own move, and just to me, it was really well done by HBK.
And like the Shawn Michaels going for the super kick, and then like not being able to.
Yeah.
He's like I have to do this, and then he like fakes the super kick, and then he's like I can't do it. And then Ric Flair just grabs the legs and figure fours him. Like,
well, yeah, the psychology.
Dirtiest player in the game.
Yeah, the psychology was that. You know, listen, I don't know if I've got what it takes to put down my hero.
Yeah.
They do that move to kind of show the inner conflict within him.
Mm-hmm.
I feel silly even bringing it out like this, but that's the psychology of it.
That's what they and built
then,
it for.
Then the rest of the match is just building up the anger for him to use the move to put out his hero.
Yeah.
And then it ends with, you know, Flair getting up for the final, you know, because he's doing this thing where he's calling for the sweet chin music, and you know Flair can't get up, so he'll go over and try and pick him up,
yeah,
and then Flair will, you know, do the low blow,
yeah,
and then, you know, another thing to just get him pissed off, and then, you know, he finally has damaged him so much, he's in there he's in the corner for the last call for sweet chin music, Flair gets up and he's just like,
give it to me,
you know, and then it's the through I'm tears. Sorry, I love you,
yeah.
Sweet chin music, 1, 2, 3, and then he leaves the ring to the legend, Ric Flair. What did you think about the ending of this match?
It was so good. It was like if
I'm marking.
Total marking out right now. If this had been Ric Flair's true final match, then that's all he needed. Like this would probably be the perfect send off. You know, he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame the previous night.
Right.
Goes out like this. Is a great way to go out.
It was. He's very Jordan-esque in this way, in that it's not about the accolades and all that. Because, you know, Jordan could have gone out with the perfect shot and on top. He comes back because he just has to know. Like, he basically just has to figure out that I can't do this any longer.
Yeah.
This would have been the perfect platform. It was the deserved way to go out. But he ends up, you know, going out in TNA in some, you know, weird fashion. But that's... He just wants to wrestle. That's all he wants to do.
This is what he does. He's a wrestler.
For what this was, I thought this was a wonderful salute by the biggest company that does this to one of the biggest heroes of the business.
And I agree.
It was A-plus all across the board. It was what he deserved. Nothing more, nothing less. And the crowd gave him a well-deserved accolades at the end of that. And they let him take his time walking up the ramp and the final salute. The only thing at the end was he looked like no one told him where to leave. He's looking at how to get off the damn stage.
Yeah.
But that was it, man. Everything else to me was so perfect.
Yeah. I welled up at the end. I welled up.
I was a little touched as well.
Yeah.
We go to the back where there's an interview with Edge. I wish we could have skipped that. And I just didn't enjoy that promo very much because it was pretty much the streak thing of I'm going to end the streak, and I'm crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought he did a great job in selling it.
Fine.
We'll counterpoint.
Disagree again.
Point, counterpoint. I think, like, yes, it was something that we've heard.
Edge is a monster.
We've heard it a dozen times. He lived through fire.
He lived through fire. Edge lived through Canada.
Edge's brother is the Undertaker.
I lived through Canada in hockey. Okay.
I thought it was good.
We go to match number 6, which is between
Ashley and Maria versus Beth Phoenix and Melina with Santino Marella.
And this is a Playboy Lumberjill match. And Snoop Dogg arrives and he drives to the ring in a tricked out golf cart. Mercedes, leopard skin, looking great. He's got a lot of beautiful ladies with him.
Yeah.
And, That's where I lost my interest in this match. What about you?
I thought that, like, Beth Phoenix is a very good wrestler.
Not true. Go ahead.
You could not tell by this match.
Nope.
Because, like, Maria goes for, like, a Bronco Buster, and it was, like, awful because she runs up to it and then stops and then climbs over the ropes and then goes for the Bronco Buster, like, which is just bad. Like, that's not what it is. Like, that's just not how you do it. But right. Then the lights went out.
Yeah. What a deal.
The lights went out of this match.
It's how I know that prayer works. Because that's exactly what I was thinking as it happened, I was going, please, God, Jesus, all of you, if you love wrestling, please find a way to disrupt this match. Mm-hmm. And then God turned out the lights.
It's crazy that God can go back 8 years mm-hmm. and just change
that's how like powerful that. God is.
Well, that's impressive.
You should look into it.
Well, I mean, he is...
God can do anything.
Omnipotent, so yep. I guess that would make sense.
There you go.
My bad. You've learned my bad, God. Today.
Yeah, they end up finishing this match, and they're trying to fix the technical difficulties. Mm-hmm. They end up just getting kind of like some floodlights or yeah. like the spots on it.
Good thing they have generators at the Citrus Bowl.
You can tell it was... it was debilitated a little bit by the lack of overhead mm-hmm. production lights, but they managed to get this match over with, which is what I was happy about. We then go to the back to promote the triple threat match, and basically the promotion of this match is showing how injured everybody was at one time going yep. into this match,
yep.
which may not be the way. I mean, it's like, hey, these are people that are less than 100%. Get yeah. ready to watch this.
Right.
But I think they were trying to say, these people have overcome everything.
Yeah.
Canada included, or whatever. Or monsters.
Shoulder injury.
That's right.
Triple H had to overcome John Cena to get to this match.
That's right.
Yeah.
He overcame a really shitty blue blood gimmick early yeah. on in his career and a ponytail that wouldn't quit. But this takes us right to match number 7, which is between...
John Cena versus Triple H versus Randy Orton.
Cena's back with a vengeance and a marching band.
God fucking John Cena.
You don't like him?
I don't like this?
He's in his college football jersey, man.
Yeah, I put goddamn marching band. Fuck you, John Cena. Hey, that's my note.
If Triple H gets to come in on a, you know, a Terminator,
yeah.
then John Cena can have half a marching yeah. band.
My thing is, like, I wanted, like, you start the marching band and then your music hits.
Okay.
That's fine. I'd be okay with that. But the marching band played the song for the entire entrance.
Yeah, but they learned it. Like
Yeah, you
How would okay, you're in college. You've got finals.
You have to learn. You're
in the marching band and your director calls you in and says, "Hey, listen, I got this opportunity for us. You got to learn this song and go play at the Citrus Bowl."
You had 4 notes to learn. Ba ba da ba. And then the cymbal crash every once in a while. Crash.
I think you
do that for 8 bars, and then the music actually hits, so then he can run down to the ring. So that way, when he's in the ring, he can actually celebrate and throw up his little sign where he throws up like his pinkies or whatever, what have you. I don't know what he does. No, he does this.
All right, let me put it to you like this.
Okay, I'm not buying
it. The University of Miami marching band is a monster.
Okay.
That has overcome fire.
Did John Cena overcome this monster?
I don't know, but we got a marching band. Triple
yeah,
H,
I'm not
Triple
down
H has probably the most subdued entrance that he's ever had at WrestleMania.
Yep.
It's just him with some tricked up lights, mm-hmm. Which I was, you know, okay. And then Randy Orton comes out, does his posing.
Yep.
They start this match with Orton grabbing the belt, knocking Triple H out,
mm-hmm.
and so now he's got just John Cena to wrestle with right now. Triple threats. They usually do, especially in higher profile matches, they usually do a good job of isolating the action,
yep.
meaning, you know, someone's always rolling around hurt on the outside while two people go after it on the inside.
Yeah.
What did you think of this match, sir?
I was very surprised at how good this match was. Really? Or how much I enjoyed this match.
Okay.
John Cena obviously does his thing where he doesn't sell. He'll like sell for a few minutes and then he doesn't sell. There was a good contrast between how good Triple H is at selling versus John Cena is at selling. Like mm-hmm. even there's a spot where John Cena had the STF on Randy Orton and he doesn't tighten up the chin lock,
right.
which is just or the face lock, and it's just a mess. It doesn't look good. And then Triple H puts on the crossface and it was like, oh wow, this Triple H was selling this. And it just looked really good. At one point, Randy Orton goes for the RKO, and then John Cena threw him off, and he landed on Triple H. And I was like, that looks bad. Like, it looked like that was a botch. Like, he should not have been doing that.
I thought Randy Orton had a really great match.
Yes, he did.
Not so much the other two, but I think, as far as psychology-wise, I think Orton really set up his play as a dastardly person.
Mm-hmm.
Early on with the belt thing, and then just kind of how he wrestled and interfered with what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it was illegal, but it was like, oh, I'm going to wait for a perfect time to go in and take advantage of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as this match ended up, I mean, we had the, you know, Triple H reversing the FU and getting the pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
Triple H gets the two count because Orton comes in and kicks him in the head.
Yeah.
And then with Cena knocked out, he takes advantage and covers for the win. So that's what I mean. Like, he would constantly in this match, he was looking for kind of like that to take advantage.
Yeah.
And he did it and got the win. So I like that aspect. I thought he was great in this
match.
It was
a very good end. I like that spot a lot.
I didn't like the match as much as you did, but I just thought...
okay, hey, I'm not like singing praises over here, well, I mean, but it was good.
It kind of sounded like that. I mean, they overcame monsters and shit, whatever. But
they go through a labyrinth and they fight the Sphinx.
No, but just some of the Randy Orton matches that we've seen,
yes,
not always great.
No, absolutely.
But for this one, I thought he was really good.
Yeah,
and no. I liked the finish. Yeah.
Okay,
lot.
So it sounds like you really enjoyed this match, just like me, Terry.
This was a 15-minute match. I enjoyed.
Was it really that long?
It was.
Wow.
I enjoyed 90 seconds of it, maybe. So that's not. I don't think that's saying.
Okay.
There was a lot of Cena Triple H back and forth.
Yeah.
And with no sell, you know, okay, there was fair. A lot of those spots while we're setting up this Orton thing. So yeah,
I'll say the good outweighed the bad for me.
Okay. And that's fair. We will continue to agree to disagree. I love it. We go to the back, and basically there's a promo for the big fight, as we've discussed, the setup for this, as what they highlighted, and then we go right to match number 8, which is between
Big Show versus Floyd Money Mayweather.
And this is, if you've seen Rocky 3, that's between Rocky and Thunderlips. That's ostensibly what this is.
Yep.
Floyd's got his boxing gear on, and... Big Show's in his wrestling gear.
Yeah.
And I actually really like this match.
It was a good match.
Not a fan of the gimmick matches generally, but I was really impressed with how many bumps Floyd took.
Yeah.
He got money to be in this. Early on, I was thinking it was going to be crap because a lot of the guys on his team, his posse, were taking bumps for him.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh shit, this is going to be a thing where, you know, Floyd's going to lay his stuff in, and then Show's just going to have to go to his dudes to get his stuff in.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a point in this match where Floyd couldn't run anymore.
Yeah.
Show got him in the corner, did the shh, and chopped him. He took a legit chop.
Yep.
And then, because I've got a note here praising his selling, he probably wasn't trying really hard. It was probably a legit sell.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Giant standing on him, even though, I mean, he's... You know, walking over him,
but still, at some point there was 450 pounds on his chest.
You know, doing the side suplex, elbows. Like he took some legit bumps. So I was actually impressed with how he worked in this match.
Yeah, at one point Big Show picked up one of the guys from the posse like by his shirt.
Yeah,
and he like legitimately picked the guy up by his shirt, and he was like a solid 200 pounds, the guy. He wasn't like a small one, but it was like, that guy's strong. Overall, like, I enjoyed this match. Like you said, he was pretty strong, pretty good showing. Floyd took the bumps. He did what he was doing. He knew what he was doing, I should say. There was like the one thing I didn't like is the manager in the white suit kept saying, like, you can't do that. He can't do that.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, he can. That's what he's doing.
Right.
But then,
no, he's doing it. Look.
Yeah, no, look at him. And then the minute, at one point, he goes to drop an elbow on
Floyd.
Big Show goes to drop, and then the guys pull him out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the manager's like, "We out!" And then
then
they go walk away, and then Big Show chases after him. And I'm like, "Oh man, some of those guys are gonna take bumps right now." And they did.
They do, and this was from Rocky III as well. And you always kind of see it when there's such a size disparity. But you've got the sleeper hold segment where Floyd's on Show's back trying to bring him to his knees with the choke hold.
Yep.
This match kind of starts to go home with Big Show getting Floyd in position for a choke slam. One of his buds comes in and hits. Gets a chair shot on Show, who in return chokeslams that dude.
Mm-hmm.
And then Floyd starts to go to town on Show with the chair. Lots of shots.
Yep.
Legit shots. And then he puts on some brass knucks and knocks out Show, and Show can't make the 10 count.
Right.
So it ends as Floyd wins, which leads us to our email question, and this is from at the Big Slow. Do you think it looks bad for athletes from other sports to come in and get wins over the wrestlers? I'm assuming, like, does it make the business look bad when they do this? Because this automatically made me think of Lawrence Taylor.
Right. I think this was done in a much better way.
Okay.
In that, like, Big Show still looked like a monster.
Okay.
Like, Floyd had to use brass knuckles. And it's also, like, Floyd Mayweather, you know, is the best boxer in the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he had credibility, whereas I think Lawrence Taylor was a retired football player.
Right.
Which I think is a little different plane, whereas, like, Floyd Mayweather was an active boxer, like, at this point. So I think it wasn't, like...
And beat him with his strengths.
Yes.
Plus, he had to cheat big time to win. Like,
right.
You're right. They did set it up to where, you know, he had to hit him several times with the chair and then the brass knucks.
Yeah.
And then he still wasn't knocked out. He just couldn't make the 10 count. You're right. He looked strong on this.
Whereas, it wasn't just, like, one punch to the jaw.
And whereas, like LT... legit beat
Bam Bam.
He legit beat Bam Bam in the middle of the ring, 1-2-3.
With a forearm off the second rope.
Right.
Like,
so
that's
listen, the WWE has always tried to align themselves with these types of things to extend the brand to places that it usually wouldn't go to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've seen this all the time. I thought in this one instance, I thought they did it right this time to keep their guy whole and still, you know, because, you know, the way Floyd sold and did the match, I thought he made it look credible. So in this one case, I thought it was fantastic. The LT case, I think the Big Slow's got a point in that. I thought that really looked bad, especially in the main event.
Yeah, like, absolutely. You know. I think maybe they did a good job of, like, learning from that experience because this one, it was a success. I think this one would be counted as a success.
Okay. We get to Kim Kardashian announcing the attendance in the middle of the ring, and the crowd goes mild, and then do the promo for the main event, and then we go right to match number 9, which is between
The Undertaker versus Edge.
And this is for the World Heavyweight Championship. The streak gimmick is fully utilized. It's now it's now The Undertaker's only legacy at this point because that's all they talk about. So as he's coming to the ring, the streak.
Yeah,
that's how they're promoting the match, the streak.
Yeah, this has become like the second main event. It's like championship,
right.
Streak.
Exactly.
Or so, this one's together. But.
And I think that kind of takes away from... The Undertaker's so good at psychological wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
When they don't have that element, that personal element to it, I don't like it as much.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this is just another guy that's coming to take the brass ring as opposed to grudge match, brother versus brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Undertaker grudge match versus Flair. Like, something that's got... A little bite to it, as opposed to I'm just knocking the next big thing out.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of this match, sir?
I thought it started off kind of slow, but it picked up towards the end, and I really enjoyed this match.
Okay,
overall, I enjoyed the match. They had some really solid spots. Obviously, Edge at this point, Edge had his edgeheads, which was Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder, who dressed just like him and had long hair just like him, and even put on fake tattoos like him. They used to help Edge win matches, and I thought, like, they utilized those fairly well in this. Undertaker does his, like, leg drop on the apron spot, or like he did his dive over the top, then he put him on the apron, which he does his leg drop,
right?
But he did a boot first, which we haven't seen, which is a good spot.
Yeah, they also utilized old school in a different way than I'd seen before. It's usually just kind of early in the match, kind of a one-off thing to weaken the opponent.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, they did it 3 times. The first two, Edge found ways to counter them, which gives him you know, a little savvy, a little credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one was actually pretty devastating and led to a pin. So I thought that was an interesting thing to the match. I didn't enjoy this match as much as you did because, I don't know, it just, like, again, it didn't have the psychology for me. But Edge is a really good worker, and I do like him, but I think I like him more in the big death-defying matches than maybe in just singles matches where he's trying to do a leg bar to, I don't know. Like, to me, I'm waiting for something bigger, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought they did a good job of, contrarily, I did enjoy, like, the psychology of Edge being able to counter so much in this match.
Okay.
Because like Undertaker is so established that like he knows what he's going for, that Edge knows what Taker's going for. So to be able to like counter Old School twice, he went up for a Last Ride a couple times, countered those Tombstones, countered. So I enjoyed that aspect of.
Well, he also countered Last Ride. You know.
Yep. Yep.
It made it look like he was a student of what Undertaker did and was figuring ways to to beat him.
Yep.
There was a spot in this match where he actually slips the big boot, which is another move that he kind of breaks up, and it actually knocks out the ref.
Yep.
At least to a little segment where, you know, the Undertaker gets on top, gets the Last Ride. Was it a Tombstone?
Tombstone.
He gets the Tombstone.
Yes, Tombstone.
And, you know, he's got him laid out, but there's no ref, so a ref has to come in from the back, which is about a mile and a half away.
And little Nate ran.
He ran so hard.
It was great.
He ran super fast, got to the ring, slid in. I love it when they just go through and just slide under that bottom rope and just start counting. That was pretty cool. But he only got to two. So now, you know, now the crowd's really into it. The Edgeheads come in, and the Edge
get disposed of very quickly.
Yes. You know, I'm glad they got a paycheck. They both took one punch each and were down forever.
Yeah.
You might want to look into some new cronies there, buddy. But Edge ends up getting a spear for a two count. Taker then applies the Hell's Gate and eventually gets Edge to tap, which was interesting. What do you think of this finish as opposed to maybe, you know, taking a Last Ride or another Tombstone for three? Like, a submission tap is a very specific kind of win.
Yeah, I enjoy pinfall finishes way better than I do submission finishes. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the last few, because and John Cena beat Shawn Michaels with a tap. Then this one was a tap. John Cena beat Triple H with a tap.
Yep.
Benoit beat Triple H with a tap as well. So the last, there's been, in the last like four or five, there's been a good amount of taps. But I enjoy the pinfall because there's just so much more to it. Like when the ref's counting the three, it's a bigger moment.
Right.
In my opinion.
Do you think that's a response to the kind of fledgling MMA culture at this point?
Yes.
That UFC's starting to really get some track, and, you know, audience are being exposed to this submission type of victory.
I think that's very good point, because Undertaker was, his finisher, the Hell's Gate, is a Goga Plata, which is a jiu-jitsu submission move, which you see often in UFC and MMA. There's also, at one point, when Brock Lesnar was in UFC, Undertaker was there in the front row.
Right.
And when Undertaker, actually, when Brock Lesnar lost his match, he's walking by, and Undertaker's like, "You want to do it?" And he was being interviewed by Ariel Helwani, and then Brock doesn't say anything. But they were going to set up a match for Mania.
Yeah.
Undertaker was going to interrupt the press conference and start a match for WrestleMania.
Nice.
And then Brock Lesnar didn't even show up at the press conference because he lost.
I just wondered that, because you're right. We're seeing a lot more submission holds. And I think that does something to the psychology as well. You can't have a motto of never quit and then tap out.
Yeah.
To a lot, you know, I just think that's kind of interesting. Taker goes over. He is the champion again. And that is all for WrestleMania 24. So let's go to our awards. Wei, what is your pop of the night?
My pop of the night, I'm going with Kane winning the belt after 11 seconds.
Get the fuck. You're fired. This is now a one-man podcast, and I hate you.
Go for it. Do it.
My pop of the night.
You got nothing.
My pop of the night. Yeah, I got something big. It's a fucking history is what I got. My pop of the night is everything Ric Flair. Everything. Every step he took, pop. Everything he did, pop.
Okay, he's going to get other awards. I'm going to give him other awards.
No, you're not. Everything's about Kane for you. What is your botch of the night?
Kane.
Everything he did.
My botch, I'm going with... I had four options, and I'm going with...
You found four?
Four, yeah.
Okay.
All right, I'll just read all four of them.
Okay. I don't know if I had them.
Finley had trouble picking up the trash can lid, and it was just funny to me. Because he tried like five times to pick up.
A man's lack of coordination.
Yes.
Got it? One.
The Batista bomb to Umaga. He had a little bit too much momentum.
Fair, but unfortunate.
The lights going out.
That's mine. Yeah.
And then Cena throwing Orton on top of Triple H.
Okay.
I'll go. I'm going to go with the lights going out.
Yeah. That I had two. Mine was Michael's The Table Not Breaking.
Okay.
Because that was just an unfortunate incident.
Yeah.
But that is actually the moonsault is actually my bump of the night. So okay. I'll make the lights going out
is your botch
and Kane and the ECW championship is my botch.
Awesome.
What is your bump of the night, sir?
My bump of the night. I'm going with the Sunset Flip Superplex. It was
in the Money in the Bank.
The Money in the Bank match.
That was very impressive.
Yeah.
Doing two moves at once with three. That was pretty great.
It's a solid bump.
What is your spot of the night, sir?
What's your bump? Oh, your bump. I'm
my
sorry.
Bump
your
is
bump
the
was the moonsault. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Spot. My spot, the end of the Triple Threat match with Orton, Triple H.
That was mine, too.
Nice. Hey, look at that. We're agreeing on stuff.
How can we agree and
take it back? Kane winning in 11 seconds.
You're hired.
The end of the Triple Threat match. That was a really good. Randy Orton coming out of nowhere with the boot.
Yeah, it was set up really good because the majority of that match was Cena versus Triple H and then Orton every now and again.
Yeah.
What is your worst match of the night, sir?
Lumberjill match.
Yes.
We're agreeing on stuff.
This is I don't like this.
I think the rest of them, I think the rest of these we're probably going to agree on stuff.
Yep. What is your best match of the night, sir?
Kane versus Chavo. No, it's Ric Flair versus Shawn Michaels. You can't
of course.
Get out of here if you think anything different.
Yep, that's true. Amazing match. And then your most valuable player for WrestleMania 24.
Ric Flair.
Damn it!
Hey, we
that's
did it!
That's mine too! How can two people hate each other so much and be so in
see,
simpatico?
Now, if you had just agreed with me on Kane winning the belt for the pop, then we'd be in good. We'd be fine.
But we're not. So
no, Rick, it has to be Ric Flair. Yeah. Ric Flair's...
This whole night was about Ric Flair for the most part, and a wonderful send-off to a very deserving icon of the business.
Just like in the emotion that he's... When he's just like crying and saying, "Give it to me!" And then Shawn Michaels kicks him right in the face.
Yeah. Well, that is all the time that we have for WrestleMania 24. Please join us next time when we review WrestleMania 25, the 25th anniversary of the Showcase of the Immortals. Mm-hmm. Just some of the wonderful matches that we have for you. We got another Money in the Bank ladder match. Mm-hmm. We've got Chris Jericho versus some WWE legends. Mm-hmm. We've got Matt Hardy versus Jeff Hardy, which just reading that makes me want to watch that match. We have got probably one of the best matches ever. We've got the Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels, the first one, which is we're not going to top that.
Spoiler alert: this is my favorite match of all time.
So join in as join in next week as Jue just goes crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to love every minute of it.
And then we've got the main event, which is Triple H versus Randy Orton for the WWE Championship. So until then, I am Terry Lumberjill Catlett here with Jue, the Samoan Bulldozer Holt, and we will see you next time.
Bye.